And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Right there, there it is! Into left field! It's number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial ran first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
And that's McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease! The kicker can't trip him up! Headed for the end zone! Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open. Brower. Rebound. He scores. Trevor. The former Blackhawk has given the Blues a 3-2 lead.
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning. Welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box, all new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you till 12. Good guest list today. Jeff Brown, Purdue coach. Derek Gould, 11 o'clock, talking Cardinal baseball. And a new St. Louis Sports Hall of Famer, Bill McDermott. If you want to be a part of the program, First Tee text lines, 855-282-8255. Opening monologue brought to you by Gateway Motorsports Park. We appreciate them being one of our sponsors. And let's begin with lap one. It's 11 out of 14. It's 10 out of 12. It's four in a row. And the two common denominators are good starting pitching and a relentless offensive attack.
Molina rips it. Fair. Inside the line. Down into the corner. Two runs will score. And Yachty to second base. 2-1 St. Louis.
Okay, so first half of the season, we're all saying impact bat. We need an impact bat. Got to acquire one. Must do something dramatic with the offense. Well, I got to tell you these, okay? Since the All-Star break, the Cardinals have scored the third most runs in the league. They're third in OPS. Now, with all that said, I still think you have to make a move for a bat in the offseason? Yeah, I believe that. Maybe Jose Martinez is your first baseman moving forward, and you live with that outfield of something like Pham, Fowler, Bader, Piscotty, and somebody else like Sierra. And then the other guys, players with trade value, like Matt Carpenter or Randall Grichuk or Jed Jerko, do you use them to acquire the third baseman or the starter or the closer? Of course, you may have your closer on the roster right now. Is it Nicasio? Is it Alcantara? He may be on your roster right now. But in terms of the impact bat, this offense is improving, but it doesn't mean you remain still in the offseason. Lap two. The story of the year, not named Tommy Pham, is Paul DeJong. Last night, another special night at the park.
DeJong, fly ball, deep center, at the wall, gone! Solo home run, Paul DeJong.
Yeah, I expected to step right up in the big leagues and be the player that I know I can be. And there's always going to be adjustments and periods where you got to, you know, climb out. But right now, I'm just focused on the day-to-day, try to help my team win.
He's humble, isn't he? A triple away from the cycle. He's on pace for 25 homers in 101 games as a shortstop. I wanted to find a great shortstop from the past who started their career by playing about 100 games. And I found Robin Yount, Hall of Famer and one of the best shortstops of all time. He played a similar amount of games in his first season, 107. He hit three homers. This kid's got 22. And here's the best stat, and Fox Sports Midwest had it last night. It's 45 extra base hits in 90 games. Albert Pujols, first 90 games, 43 extra base hits. He's second among National League rookies in OPS. He's the best rookie in the league, not named Cody Bellinger. So Pham is likely your MVP, But this kid really is amazing. Imagine the Cardinals having a shortstop batting third with 25 home runs. That's crazy. All right, lap three. So the bad news is the Cardinals pick up nothing last night. Milwaukee, Chicago, Colorado, they all win. So it's still two back of the Cubs, and the Rockies are 3.5 up on the Cards. How impressive have they been, the Rockies? They sweep the Dodgers, now two in a row against a really good Arizona team. And then they get San Diego, San Francisco, Miami, and then the Dodgers, who have nothing to play for. That's a pretty good way to finish out a season for a red-hot team. That's a big edge for the Rockies, who already have this 3.5-game lead. The Cubs, well, they have the Cardinals. First of all, they get the Mets here to finish things off. Then they have the Cardinals. Then a road trip. Tampa, Milwaukee, at St. Louis, and then they wrap up at home against Cincinnati. It's not bad either. So the Cardinals, after they finish up here with Cincy, at Chicago, then at Cincy, at Pittsburgh, then Chicago at home, and Milwaukee at home. So I guess the commish was correct when we asked him of the three situations, who has the best two situations, and he picked Colorado and Chicago. The commish was on the morning after, and he talked about what has turned the 2017 Cardinals into a dynamic offense.
Well, Memphis turned them around, probably. Yeah, DeYoung came up from May. What, he didn't figure to be here at all. So just about this time of the year when spring training started, he was a prospect, but he was not a 22-home-run prospect. Pham started the season in Memphis, got a regular job in the summertime and just kept it. Martinez might be the most important link lately. He's gone into that fourth spot with Gurko and Fowler, who had been hitting fourth, both injured, and has taken charge where when these guys come back, they're not going to be hitting fourth. Martinez is.
All right, lap four. The Jemele Hill story. Now, first of all, I want to say, I think this is a talented media member who has strong opinions and who does well on the air. So, she had some tweets recently, and you maybe have heard about them by now. Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists. Trump is the most ignorant, offensive president of my lifetime. His rise is a direct result of white supremacy, period. He is unqualified and unfit to be president. He's not a leader, and if he were not white, he never would have been elected. Donald Trump is a bigot, and they go on and on and on and on. So ESPN on Tuesday came out and they issued a statement disavowing the tweets. But she was not suspended. She was not fired. Clay Travis on the response by ESPN.
It means that nothing actually happened because Jemele Hill is saying what the higher-ups at ESPN believe. I think this goes all the way to the top, Tucker. Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, follows 59 people on Twitter. One of them is Jemele Hill. And I think what has happened is Disney and ESPN have decided we want to be a left-wing sports network. And so if a guy like Kurt Schilling comes out and he says, I disagree with the North Carolina transgender bathroom law, he gets fired. If a guy like Mike Ditka says, I don't think Barack Obama was a good president and I'm voting for Donald Trump, he gets fired. But if Jemele Hill comes out and says that Donald Trump's a white supremacist, the only reason he got elected president is because he's white and that all of his supporters are effectively bigots, she gets rewarded. She gets wrapped on the knuckles. She continues to do her show.
ESPN last year, as you mentioned, fired Kurt Schilling for his remarks on transgender bathrooms. Linda Cohen allegedly got suspended for saying that one of the reasons ESPN has lost millions of viewers is because they've become too political nowadays. Now, that is allegedly, but imagine if it's true that she got suspended for saying that and Jemele Hill did not. Here's my question for all of you. Is it good business for ESPN to be so political? Now, keep in mind, they've lost 13 million subscribers in the last 4 years. What if that happens again over the next 4 years and you lose another 13 million? I imagine they're going to lose some over this thing. I mean, they just fired 100 people back in April. As controversial as Trump is, you got to remember this. The majority of people who voted for him still support him. But the point is, you have a business model where the goal is to attract viewers. You are losing them by the millions every year. And I imagine a pretty healthy percentage of Trump voters are passionate sports fans. And you have your 6 o'clock lead sports anchor say these things or tweet these things. So the question is, and this is what I'm asking all of you to come in on the First Tee text lines, 855-282-8255. Is this good business for ESPN? And number two is, if you were running ESPN and your lead 6 o'clock news anchor comes out with these, what would you do? What would you do with her? Just do what they did, where they say that they disavowed it, and allow her to keep her job? Would you suspend her for a little bit, or would you fire her like they did with Curt Schilling? What would you do? All right, left five. You know, I'm excited about the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame dinner on Friday night. It's at the Frontenac Hilton. We've had some of the guys going in already on the air this week. Our interview with Roy Green, our interview with Randy Albright, and Bill McDermott is going to come in studio a little bit later today. You know, of all the recipients, I think the guy who's most excited about going in is Mike Martz. I mean, he had such an abrupt fall from grace. You know, regarded as, you know, the author of the greatest show on turf. From the Super Bowls, from those big contracts and all that power, to not getting another crack to becoming a head coach. Because he didn't play well with others, let's be honest. I mean, you're 20 games over 500, and you're the author of the greatest show on turf, and you don't get a second chance? Think of the dog coaches out there that get second and third and fourth chances. But this guy didn't get a second chance. Pedestrian minds like Jeff Fisher. There's talk about him getting a third chance. Martz didn't. Got a chance to be an offensive coordinator again, but no. So I think if you're, you know, in your mid-60s, and somebody calls and says, hey, we're putting you into Hall of Fame in the city where your star started to shine, it's a big deal. He was on with Martin and Charles yesterday, and I think we're going to get him on tomorrow. I know we don't like to double book, but he's Mike Martz, and I'd love to talk to him again. And I think he brought up a real interesting point about one of the reasons this franchise fell. Let's take a listen.
London Fletcher was allowed to get out of there, or dissuaded, if you will, about coming back. I didn't know that. I told them that he's the guy we can't lose, and of course, that means you're going to lose him. So he went to Buffalo for a pittance in terms of what we could, and it was supposed to be a cap issue, never was. And losing London affected our football team from that point on. It just devastated us, because he was really Marshall is really a unique leader in that team. But right next to that, before you go to anybody else, you have to put London Fletcher there and his impact on our football team.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people believe that Fletcher could end up in the Hall of Fame. He didn't have the Pro Bowl numbers, you know, making the Pro Bowl, but his tackle totals, staggering. So let's just do this for a moment. The reasons why this franchise crashed and burned after being the best in the league, and this is not in any particular order. Number one is, okay, not signing your best defensive player, London Fletcher. Okay, that's big. Now, I thought at the time that because they were giving out so many of those $10 million contracts, and let me think about this here, Kurt got one, Isaac got one, Orlando got one, Marshall got one, Torrey got one, Isaac got one. And now Mart says that you could have afforded them, and maybe you could have. Another reason, the complete screw-up by John Shaw of not being around and the mass confusion at the top. I mean, you had Martz, Army, and Zygmunt all thinking they ran the show, all fighting, and it all should be blamed on John Shaw for not being there and telling people who gets to run what. But he stayed in his L.A. office most of the time and just watched, you know, the fall of the franchise from California. Another reason, the horrible drafting. I mean, you're going to pay for drafting Jason Smith, number two. You're going to pay for drafting Greg Robinson, number two. You can't blow those picks like that. And so many other horrible picks. I mean, just succession of bad drafting. Then, number four, the succession of hiring bad coaches. Three for three. Scott Linehan, Steve Spagnuolo, and Jeff Fisher. How about that? How can you botch all of them? Number five, the injuries and ineffectiveness of Sam Bradford. See, quarterbacks who are first picks in the draft can change the direction of an entire franchise. Peyton Manning, Cam Newton, Troy Aikman, John Elway, Terry Bradshaw. Who knows if things would have been different if Sam Bradford would have become Troy Aikman? Who knows? Maybe you're drawing 65,000 every Sunday and you have this franchise quarterback and you're winning big games. Now, in Sam's defense, he had horrible receivers. He had a horrible offensive line. He had a horrible offensive coordinator. He had a horrible head coach. Everything working against them. And I don't know if Troy Aikman could have overcome that, or Peyton Manning, or Cam, Terry Bradshaw. And who knows now? Sam Bradford may be turning around his career after that sparkling 144 quarterback rating in week one. And number six, and this is the biggest reason, you had Stan Kroenke. PR disaster, a franchise-killing owner in every city, in every major sport, and a man who believes in Kevin Demoff. Who, oh, by the way, yesterday, anybody see this? He just bought a home in Los Angeles for $4.1 million. How about that? All right, lap six. Stream of consciousness. Okay, so yesterday was kind of a busy day on the recruiting front. Cartier Gordon from Webster Grove, 6'8", 250, tweeted out SLU is home. I think the SLU coaches wanted everybody to know that he's not wavering like many people thought, that he was leaning towards Mizzou. And then so a little bit later in the day, I got a text from my friend Maury Scott, and he goes, boy, you may be interested to hear this. Konzo Martin yesterday was at Belleville West, East St. Louis, and Vashon. All in one day. You know, and you got to remember, this is like in a 3 to 5 time span. That's pretty impressive. It really is that this guy is working that hard. So I just tweeted out harmlessly, hey, Konzo's working hard, man. This guy, and I used the word relentless. That's a relentless day. And then I got about 20 responses, and 10 of them were negative, and I kind of looked, and they were all from 618. The Illinois fans don't want to hear anything good about Konzo Martin. They really don't. All right, tonight I'm going to eat some barbecue. Salt and Smoke, I think, is the best ever in terms of the brisket, yeah. But Young Dom says, let's try Sugar Fire. Been there very little, so I'm going to see if they can compete with the big boys. But I hear great things about Sugar Fire. And finally, how about the city of Seattle? They've announced that they're sinking $600 million to Key Arena to make their facility an NBA state-of-the-art building. They have no team. They have no assurances from the league that they're going to get a team. But they're not messing around. They want the NBA. They know the NBA will not consider them without a building. So the city and some movers and shakers are getting it done. I wonder if that could ever happen in the city of St. Louis. Those are my thoughts. Let's get yours. ESPN, good business model to let the anchors give strong political thoughts. Your take. What would you do with the talented Jamel Hill? Tommy Pham, he's my MVP, but equally as shocking as Paul DeJong. Will they catch the Cubs? And what else could be listed as reasons for fall of the franchise? We'll take a short time out. We're coming right back.